WHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Hello, Susan. We're back in business. Good to see you.
It's good to be back hosting Local Talk with you, though we'll all miss Dennis Hart, who's been bringing us the news as well as being your co-host.
But we'll have no news this week since he's on the road to California and needs to get set up for whatever comes next in Dennis's life.
Once he gets settled, he says he's going to be back poring over the local papers to bring us news highlights from the pages of the Story City Herald, the Nevada Journal, the Tri-County Times, and the Bude News Republican on Wednesdays, as well as the usual State and Ames News on Mondays and Fridays.
And he's going to be doing that from California, so we live in a marvelous age.
Yes, we do. But we have
we have our own live news story today. On Sunday, September 23rd, there was an international peace walk around Ada Hayden Park, sponsored by IRIS. That's the Iowa Resource for International Service, which coordinates homestays and activities for high school exchange students. And we have one of those students in the studio with us today to give us her impressions of those events. Hello, this is Icha. Icha,
hello.
Introduce yourself to our audience.
Okay, so my name is Maria.
Maria.
But, yeah, but there's so many Maria here. So I go with Icha.
Mm-hmm. So there's an oversupply of Marias, so you're going to be Icha.
Okay. Yeah, Icha.
From now on, you'll be Icha, Maria, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes.
Well, tell us about this event.
I'm from Indonesia, and, like, Sunday was so fun. We had a lot of fun. Like, we introduced ourselves, like, each of us, Irish student, to people who walks in Ada Hayden, like, spend their morning and afternoon in there. We introduce our culture, we introduce our country, what's, you know, our unique culture from our country.
Now, explain about your home country to everybody.
Okay, so maybe there's not so many people know Indonesia. Like, yeah. It's near Singapore.
We know Indonesia is a whole bunch of islands. And
Yes. We have like 17,000 islands.
17,000?
Yes.
I'm just trying to superimpose that on Iowa. Think of the voting precincts.
We have 17,000.
We have 99 counties. What if we had 17,000? Now, you are from one of those islands.
So we have like 5 main islands, and I'm from one of them. It's from Java. Maybe like tourists know it as Yogyakarta. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're famous of it. But I'm from Jakarta, the capital city.
Jakarta, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, now, you're, how old are you right now?
I'm 17.
And so you are in high school at Nevada.
I go to Ames High.
Oh, Ames High. Okay.
Little Cyclones.
Oh, God. Little Cyclones. You really absorbed the culture already.
Yes. Then,
So how long have you been in country here?
I think a month.
Okay.
Oh,
so
October 6th, I'll be 2 months.
So you just came right to be in time for the school term.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Now, when you went out there to Lake, to the Aden Park, tell me about what you found out there. There were people from how many different countries? Any idea?
From IRIS.
For the IRIS people, the folks who were exchange students, do you know how many countries were represented?
I think it's around 10.
10 countries.
Mm-hmm. We
and these
are 29
all
of us.
People who are attending school here in central Iowa.
Yeah.
So everyone had an opportunity to talk about their culture and their home country. Mm-hmm. And then was there food?
No, I think.
Oh, they should have had food out there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So everyone was able to give a speech about their home country.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talked about your home country, you mentioned all the islands and all the different how that spread over the Pacific.
Yes.
And name some of the other countries that were there, just so we know the breadth of the population there.
It's Egypt.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mozambique, Ghana, Philippines, Turkey, then South Africa, then Tanzania. I don't know how to spell it correctly, but it's Sierra Leone.
Suriname.
Suriname, yeah.
Well, now that's quite a variety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when you went out there, who structured this? ISIS was there to organize
all
this?
No. Excuse me. IRIS.
ISIS is not located
in
AIM. That's a bad organization. So did IRIS structure this? IRIS put it together, right? And so everyone was there, and IRIS organized it. Everyone had an opportunity to speak about their country. Now, with IRIS, is there a time when all the students who are exchange students can get together and talk? Mm-hmm. Periodically?
We met around like August 10th for the arrival orientation. Mm-hmm. But then it's not all of us, because some of us already have host family and some of us know. But then yesterday, like from Friday to Sunday, was the opportunity that we can gather together.
Really? Mm-hmm. So you said some folks have host families and some don't.
Yeah, at first.
The ones who don't. Mm-hmm. What's the story with those folks?
Like the ones who didn't arrive in here, like at August 10th. They arrived like around August 17, September. Even there was September.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like that. But you have a host family.
Yeah.
Now tell us about your host family.
My host family is awesome. Like they're so nice, they're so kind, and I have like three host siblings, and they are awesome. Like,
so how many in the host family, and what are the ages of your host siblings?
So there's my dad, my mom, and my first siblings is 13 years old. She's 13 years old, and the second is 5 years old.
Really?
She is 5 years old. Yes, she is so cute. And the last is 2 years old. He's the cutest.
So I bet they already think it's great to have a sister.
Maybe.
Yeah. And they just love you to death, don't they?
I hope so.
And Ames High School, was that a shock to – how is it different from your home school?
Oh, there's a lot of differences. Yeah. Like, I love Ames High because – they provide like everything that the student need. Mm-hmm. Like in Indonesia, we have like 16 subjects that we have to learn, like in a week.
Yes.
Because we cannot choose what we want to learn.
Really?
Yeah. Like in here, I got like so many freedom because I can choose whatever I want, like what I love to learn, and I can choose like, you know, things that I want to do, like clubs and sports that I like.
So far, what kind of choices have you made?
I take art class, the 4D media art. It's like Photoshop, and I love to do Photoshop. And I do math, and like in Indonesia, the math is like harder. And I like, it's so easy.
So the math here is easier.
Yeah, kind of.
I don't know if that's good news or not. We're probably falling behind Indonesia.
It's good news for me.
Oh, yeah. Good. I would say so, yes. Now, what do you think about football and some of these extracurricular activities at Ames High School?
Yeah.
It's quite an event every Friday night, isn't it? Football is big in the United States.
Yeah. I watch Ames High football for the first time after first day of school, I think. Then, like, I was so confused. I didn't understand at all. But then the crowd was so happy, like it was so fun. Then I just like,
so all the excitement and the cheering.
Yeah.
You got into that and you cheered when they did, even though you didn't know why they were cheering.
Even though I don't understand, where's the touchdown?
Well, when in Rome, do what the Ames people do. So far it's gone very well.
Yes.
And you're going to experience something we call winter. And you know, I hope you have the appropriate clothing and it's just a little chilly today in the air, but take it from a veteran Iowan. This is nothing compared to Aladdin, our engineer, is saying, yes, it's deadly. But it's also fun. You get a whole new wardrobe and you get out there and you see your breath 1 minute and you bump your head on it the next, you know, if it's cold enough. So what's your long-time goal vocationally? Have you decided what kind of career you'd like to have?
Oh, in college, I really want to do international relation and or communication.
Well, you're already doing international relations to some extent. And when you go back now, right now, what year are you in Ames High School? Sophomore, junior?
I'm junior.
So you'll go back to Indonesia for your senior year then next year?
Yes, I postponed my senior year.
And then where do you plan or hopefully to go to college?
There's one, like, the best college in my town. Mm-hmm. I really want to go there because my alumni from my country, like, most of them go there. So I really have, you know.
So your goal is already set to attend
yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
Well, I would invite you to come back and go to Iowa State because you're
going
to be so addicted to winter.
Yeah.
That you'll, that agreeable climate in Indonesia will say, oh, it's so boring here. There's no snow drift. And you'll have to tell everybody when you get back about how the world turns white and cold and everything. And I suppose you've already made some meaningful friendships at Ames High School.
Yes, mm-hmm.
They've been welcoming.
Yeah, they're so nice. Like, I thought I was so afraid when I first came here. Like, I'm afraid that I won't have friends. It's like the hardest thing, you know, in high school.
Yeah.
But then it turns out that they're really good. They really welcome me. And they're really interested in my, you know, home country.
Mm-hmm. Are there other exchange students at Ames High School?
Yeah, yeah, a lot.
Really?
I have friends from Spanish and German.
Really?
Germany, yeah.
And so you have some folks who are having the same experience you are from different parts of the world. And I'm sure you gravitate toward them because you're all having the same experience of getting to know Ames and Iowa and
American
the United
culture.
States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think probably one of the most, well, looking back on my teen years, you know, they're so confusing sometimes and so difficult with so many adjustments that it would absolutely frighten me to leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a certain amount of courage to do that, don't you think?
It's so hard at first. when the first week, it was so frustrating for me. My mom knew it. Like, feeling homesick and miss family and friends.
Sure.
Like, leave your comfort zone.
Yeah.
It's out of your control.
And so, actually, this event at Ada Hayden was a good time to be with other people who were having the same experience, but not going to your school. Susan, you have a question.
Yes. I have, and later in the program, we're going to play some recordings that we made with other students who,
who were there.
And we were able to get ask a few more questions about their culture. I mean, the islands are not your culture. What would you tell us about life in Indonesia?
Maybe like daily life. Is it okay?
Sure, whatever you want to say.
Like, we eat with hands. Like, it's like sometimes when we eat rice as our main food, we eat with our hands because it's kind of like more delicious to us. I don't know why, but it is. But then it's a symbol of appreciate the food more because we don't have like a tools with it, and we eat it with our hands like right away. Like, it appreciate who made it and appreciate the food like that.
So it's really intimate to eat the food with your hands.
Yeah, yeah.
For that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But you do use eating utensils for other foods? Is that right?
Yeah, for soup, yes.
Okay. I was trying to think of soup with your now Aladdin is cracking up here. He's picturing soup with your hands.
Yes.
So was this a problem for you at first? Did you wanted to eat with your hands and you couldn't because it wasn't polite in America?
Yeah. Kind of, but it's easy to use spoon, but, you know, like, sometimes I miss to eat with my hands.
Well, now, what other things about the culture were, and when you look at your culture and the one you're in now, what else stands out to you as something very new and different to you?
The
here?
Hardest.
Yeah.
The hardest is that American people really direct speech, like, they direct person. So when my mom mad at me, like angry with me back home, I cannot look her in the eyes. I have to stay to look at my feet because it's like respect them because I'm not like challenge them that I see her in the eyes. But when in here, we have to look them in the eyes, and that's the hardest because, like, you know, like I used to do this, like.
Look down.
Seeing my look down, but then I have to look straight away in the eyes.
So over here, the custom is more to have eye contact.
Yes.
That's a very interesting observation, because you'd have to have experience in both cultures to spot that difference.
Mm-hmm. Aladdin has a question.
Real quick. So a couple things. Eating with your hands. I have a son and a daughter at Ames High. Mm-hmm. My son, Musa, he's 17 too. 17 years, we couldn't teach him to eat with a spoon. So sit with him. He can eat with his hands.
He's the only guy who's eating with his hands.
I like to know him.
And the other thing, looking down, I wish my children, when I speak to them, they look down. So I'm going to teach some of the things from your culture. We would love to have you.
Okay.
Yeah, Aladdin, whenever your kids are too impudent, I would replay this interview, have it on tape. And here's this wonderful girl from Indonesia who knows how to treat adults. Well, it sounds like you're having a delightful time. And we can't see this on radio, but I see it in person, and that is that Icha has this marvelous smile that happens so automatically, and you don't have to tell yourself to smile. It just happens that way. And, you know, that's an international symbol. If somebody dropped me into a culture that I was new, the first thing I would do is smile. Mm-hmm. It's like music. It's the international language. And you're so lucky that you smile so naturally.
Thank you.
And you're so lucky to have a family you love as your host family.
I am.
And I think you're lucky to be at Ames High School.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll consider yourself very lucky until sometime in early December when suddenly. But, you know, a lot of people who come from equatorial parts of the country, of the world, when they see snow, they dive in it and love it and make snow angels. And then by March, they're tired of snow like we are.
Yeah, many people told me that.
Well, I tell you what, it's been delightful to have you here. And
thank you so much.
I wish
much.
We could spend a whole hour. I'm so glad that the event this weekend at the lake was attended well, and also you got to meet other folks who are here as exchange students.
Yes.
And we're going to play some audio here soon of interviews with those people. So, Maria Icha.
Yes.
Whichever you want to be called. Thank you. Go back.
Thank you so
you
much.
You have to
for
go right away
me.
To Ames High School. And
yes.
Yeah. And get more learning, as we say here. Very nice to have you. And
thank you so much.
I think we're going to have to introduce you to Aladdin's son so that he can shape up. Thank you, Icha.
Thank you.
Wow.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. This is Susan Franzen, one of your hosts for today, together with my co-host Paul Wearson, who's been talking with Icha, who has been in the studio with us, an exchange student at Ames High, telling us about the International Peace Walk held out at Ada Hayden Park last Sunday. Ursula Rudenberg attended the Peace Walk and recorded some of the voices. Let's hear her report.
Hi, I'm here from KHOI, and
Hi.
Susan Franzen is going to be covering your thing tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
So I promised her I'd come out and get some interviews.
Oh, awesome.
So I guess if you would just kind of explain what's going on here and what's happened so far.
So today is the International Peace Walk. It is being hosted by IRIS. We are the Iowa Resource for International Service. We're a nonprofit here in Ames that helps support the mission of peace in the community. And one of the ways we do that is by bringing foreign exchange students here to Iowa. So this year we have 29 students from 25 different countries from all.
And they're in different communities in Iowa?
Yes. So they are in different communities. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I would say it's over 22, 23 different communities in Iowa from all corners of the state, from large cities like Des Moines to small towns like Osage.
Yeah.
So any size town, different families from young couples who may have just recently married, don't have any children yet, are hosting. And then we have retired couples who have grandchildren are hosting. So,
And how many different countries are represented?
There are over 50 countries in the YES program where we take students from. We have students from 20... 24 or 25 different countries this year. We have a few students who are from the same country, but about 25 different countries this year.
So what's happening? We're out here at Ada Hayden. What's happening out here?
Today we have our International Peace Walk. It's our fourth annual. Every year, right around the International Day of Peace, we come out to Ada Hayden and we invite all of our students to come out. We also invite different organizations from the community who also help support the mission of peace. And we have a peaceful walk through the park. We set up booths for each different organization and for our students, and guests will get a passport that they will get stamped at each booth, just like as you go to a different country, you get your passport stamped.
So what happens at each booth? Does something different happen?
Yes, definitely. So we have different booths. We have a hijab styling booth where some of our students are showing how to wear a hijab. We're offering henna as well, so giving temporary henna tattoos. We also have booths that are helping with trivia and maps, so learning about the different countries of the world. And then my favorite booth is the cultural presentations, where some of our students have actually brought traditional clothing or props from their countries and are giving presentations to guests about their country as they stop by. We also have the Ames Human Relations Commission out here, along with Easter Seals of Iowa, ISU International Student Council, League of Women Voters. So lots of different organizations who are all in the mission of peace, which we want to bring to our community.
And how's it going? Are you getting people doing the walk?
Definitely. We've had people who have come for the walk specifically, but it's such a beautiful day out here at Ada Hayden. The sun's shining, so lots of people are coming out to walk their dogs or just enjoy the nice weather before it turns to winter. And we've been able to invite multiple people who may not have heard of the walk to join us today, which has been great.
Great. So I can just walk. I can just follow the path.
Yeah.
And
anywhere you see a white booth, minus that one, mm-hmm. they left. Any of the other white booths, we have our different groups there.
Okay. And does it go all the way around the park?
Just the north side.
The north side.
So the north loop is where we are this year.
Okay. Any other comments you'd like to say?
If anyone's interested in IRIS or our mission, definitely visit our website. It is iris-center.org, where you can find more information about potentially being a host family or donating to our cause as well.
Okay. Thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm going to walk around and just get some sound bites from people.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Can I interview you for the radio?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Do you want to give your name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Salah Mazloum. From Lebanon.
And where are you here in Iowa?
I'm hosted in Des Moines, and I go to Hoover High School at Beaverdale. So I'm hosted by the Rowlands.
The Rowlands are the family that you're living with?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what you're experiencing.
Well, you're experiencing a new culture, new people, new everything, even though not only the American people, you are now experiencing with the whole world, all around the world, from Tanzania, from other countries that you've never heard about.
Because of the other students?
Well, yes, because of everything. It's the most diverse country in the world, maybe America.
Oh, I see, because of all the different types of people you meet here.
And even though Hoover High School is the most diverse school in the state, it has about 55 different countries. They speak all about 42 different languages. So that's very good.
Wow.
Yes.
Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, very, very much.
Wow. So you enjoy the diversity?
Yeah, I enjoy the diversity because I've met Lebanese for my whole life. I want the difference. I want to meet different people.
How would you describe where you come from?
I would describe them like the Americans, but not with the diversity. We have from other countries like Iraq and Syria and Jordan and those Arabian countries, but they still speak the same language, but not like here in America. You see a lot of different countries speaking a lot of different languages. So we have a kind of diversity and religion diversity, and we are very democratic like the government here in America. So it's the same, mostly the same.
Mm-hmm. It can be quite beautiful, right? You're born on the sea.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. Mm-hmm. We have very nice views, but some places they are not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of conflict.
Yes. Well, they are mostly conflicts because of, you know, Syria, but limits with Syria now, and some conflicts with the Israelis. But now it's good. Now there's peace because of the UN.
So as a young person, what's your vision for the future of Lebanon?
Well, my future vision, I like it to be a kind of peace places, all the Arabian countries, and to be united and be like America, so being one country, loving each other, being...
That's how you see us?
Well, I'm here only 1 month and a half, so... Uh-huh. Yeah. And I was nice till now.
So what grade are you in?
I'm a junior, grade 11.
In high school?
In high school, yes.
And how did you end up doing this?
Well, it was like you apply for the BS program, then you go for two different tests in English. And if your English is very good, they just take you for an interview. Then they will see your character traits, if you are able to be a leadership and come to this wide, diverse place. And you can make it and take this experience and just share what your experience in your home country with the other countries in the world and just give them informations and give them the real ideas of what you think in your own country, not what they just may stereotype or what, and given new informations they don't know.
So you're an ambassador?
Yes, I'm an ambassador.
Your favorite memory so far? You've only been here a little while. Well, your favorite thing so far?
Going to Dakota and knowing there.
Going to Dakota?
Yes. Northeast Iowa.
That's a town?
Yes.
So you went to a town in northeast Iowa called Dakota?
Yeah.
And what did you like about it?
Elk canoeing in a very large sea.
The what?
Very large river.
You went to the Mississippi?
Yes.
So you liked the Mississippi?
Yes. Yes, I like doing there and with the family, so.
It's a beautiful river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
We're basically exchange students, and over here, we came here with different boots, so we're basically trying to show our culture to other people so that they can learn more about the world, and we get to interact with a lot of people.
And your culture is?
I'm from Pakistan, so... Over here, I'm helping out with the henna tattoos, which are a very traditional thing back home, where during celebrations, we usually get henna tattoos, and we give them to others as well, and it's a sign of happiness and love among family and friends.
And does it have a particular symbol, or is it mostly decoration?
If you see this stuff over here, that's Mughal symbolism. So basically back in the day, say like the 10th, 11th century, during that time, the Mughal architecture had a lot of this stuff. So there are swirls that turn into petals and flowers, and then we turn it into a modern design by creating it into a bracelet. Usually, if you go to places like the Taj Mahal or the Badshahi Mosque in Lahore, you can see this stuff in architecture.
So this is a decoration with a historical context.
Yes.
And the Mughal was a dynasty.
Yeah, the Mughal dynasty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of the greatest dynasties in the world. Mm-hmm. When I was coming to the U.S., my only goal was to go see the world and learn with the world. And I feel like that is one of the best ways to learn more about other cultures. Because when you're learning about other cultures, you need to have a sense of acceptance in yourself as well, and you need to be more open to change, you have to have a sort of understanding, because if you have the will to learn about other cultures, if you want to understand them better, if you want to explore them better, then I think that is the best way to go towards peace. Because over here, I have known many people that are so curious about Pakistan that they ask me everything. They're like, they're surprised when I show them henna tattoos. They look at my embroidered clothes and are very happy to see that stuff. And like when I tell them about the art and culture and the history behind the place that I live, my home. And the fact that they want to learn about it makes me really, really happy. And I think that's the best thing about the U.S. There's people from every background, every culture, every country you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like people to know about Pakistan?
I would like them to know that it's not just a war against terrorism going on in Pakistan. We are a very peaceful country. And we have a lot of beautiful places. Like in Pakistan, the varying topography will surprise you. We have mountains, we have deserts, we have plains, we have valleys. We have literally everything you can imagine. And I wish that people would come to Pakistan and see all that. And Pakistan is like, the area is, it has a lot of history and culture in it. So we have so many ethnicities and we speak so many languages, and I hope that more people get to know about all that stuff.
Your name is?
Amahle is my full name, but then people call me Ama now. Yeah, because it's easier.
And you're a student too?
Yes, I'm an Irish student. I'm from South Africa and I live in Atlantic, Iowa now. Yes.
And you're getting a tattoo?
Yes, I'm getting a henna bracelet, and I also got my name in Urdu, which is the language that they speak in Pakistan. Yeah.
Do people get henna tattoos in Pakistan, in South Africa?
Yeah, people get a lot of henna tattoos. Like there are many like tribal markets around in South Africa where you could go get henna tattoos and like very culturistic things as well. There's like a wide diversity of culture in South Africa.
How's your experience so far?
So far, it's different. There's a lot of getting used to around, but then it's fun. So far, it's fun meeting different people, new people. It's a nice experience.
What was really different for you when you first got here? What seemed?
Yeah, school. School was very different. First of all, we use laptops like every day at school. Everything you do is on the internet. You need to be connected to Wi-Fi 24/7 if you want to do work. Back home, we use books, textbooks and books. Also, the fact that there's so many options on the subjects that you can choose. Like you can do college classes while you're still in high school. That's a really big thing here, and we didn't do that back home. And there are like so many options within the school context where you can choose which math you do. You can choose which sciences you do. Whereas in most of our countries, if you take math, you do everything that involves math. If you take science, you do everything that involves science. So I feel like it's nice how you have so many options and you can really choose what you like, and that you don't have to take everything else just because you have to, but you can take what you really enjoy. I think that's a really good thing. But it was different, so it was kind of hard having to choose the different subjects, whereas I'm used to having all of them, but yeah, that's really nice, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is a peace walk today. Yeah. You were kind of an ambassador in your coming to a different country. What would your message be in regards to peace?
I feel like in order for us to get peace, we need to first understand other people's cultures and understand other people first. And then from there, we need to actually respect what we've learned from other people. Because if we don't know and don't respect other people's cultures, languages, and diversities, then we won't have peace. And also, like, having a calm mentality and not being so, like, you should have peace within yourself first before you can spread out that peace to other people. Because if you don't have inner peace, then you're definitely not going to take out peace to other people.
So peace starts with your, from inside.
Yeah, because you give what you have. So if you do not have peace, then no one else is going to get peace from you, and you're not going to radiate peace.
This is KHOI Community Radio. We just heard a report of last Sunday's International Peace Walk, with the embodiment, which was the embodiment of Iowa Nice. Next Tuesday, October 2nd, at the Ames Public Library, there will be a program about forgotten or suppressed Iowa history of a time when Iowa was not so nice. Michael Lewick-Throms is with us to give us a preview of his talk on Tuesday, The Klan, the White Cancer.
Well, welcome, Michael. This is Paul Wearson. I'm Susan's co-host today. Hope you're on the line, Mike.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Well, I see your program's coming up on the 2nd, and it's going to be very interesting. I'm going to be there myself because you have a fascinating topic. How did you come to be involved with describing these events?
Well, again, there are four dovetailing topics that all work together, and Ames will be talking specifically about the second wave of the Klan. All four of them offer us a different angle of what was going on for our parents, or more likely grandparents or great-grandparents, between 1914 and 34. They give different angles of the same creature. What was influential in that period, and they're all very obscure stories, but that fit together and follow in one direction.
Well, now, this is the period right after World War One. Is that correct?
That's right. The first story takes place once the United States entered World War One, the anti-German hysteria, but thereafter, the topic I'm speaking about today in Grinnell and Marshall County is the pandemic, the flu scourge that began in September 1918 and took over 6,000 lives. The third topic is the second wave of the Ku Klux Klan. In Iowa, unfortunately, had a lot of Klan members, tens of thousands. And the fourth topic is about the farmer rebellions during the Great Depression. So we call it the Cow Wars. That's what it was called at the time as well.
So you're talking about some very stressful times that were connected to other events, too. I know the flu epidemic, of course, is identified with the ending year of World War II, 1918. In fact, I lost an uncle to that, young Willard, who I never knew because he died in 1919, I believe, during the flu epidemic. And he was just a child, so we only have pictures of him. And we know that the flu epidemic struck not only in the United States but worldwide. And you talk about that in your presentation, right?
I do. There were worldwide estimated 50 million victims of the flu who died. India, for example, had almost 20 million alone. The United States lost 675,000 people, approximately, to the flu in 1918-19. Those were different waves of the same virus strain. What's interesting to me is we lost more people from that flu epidemic in a few months than all the Americans who died in the Civil War or in all wars since combined. And yet, we hardly talk about it. Most people don't even know about it. There are no memorials, no plaques that you find compared to about World War One, World War Two, the other wars. Why is this? So these are interesting questions that I posed during the programs. You know, how do you take these traumatic experiences and as a people, as families, as communities, you sort of airbrush them out of the narrative? How does that happen? Because these are huge events, and yet soon after they happen, they're almost like they never took place. They're forgotten. There's a collective amnesia.
Yeah, I think the thing about that is the fact that nobody likes to think about it because of the possible recurrence of that sort of event. And there's no glory connected with that like there is with war, no traditions of valor and all that sort of thing.
And
I really think that the more we know about pandemics and the flu, the more we know that eventually some virus could evolve that we have no answer for. So pandemic scares us. We probably don't want to recall those events because we fear their repetition. Now, the Klan, tell me about the Klan.
You're exactly right about what you said, that we tend to suppress things that we don't want to think about. Last night I gave this program about the Klan in State Center, Iowa, which is between Marshalltown and Ames. And what was interesting there is that the audience said in the question and answer period that they didn't like talking or thinking about this topic. It's just the historical fact that there were tens of thousands of Klan members in Iowa in the 1920s, my great-grandfather, for whom I was named as one of them. We know that nationwide there were over 3 million Klan members in the 20s, especially most notable outside the South. The Klan outside the South wasn't particularly anti-black, although I'm sure that the movement itself wasn't particularly friendly to African-Americans, but it was rapidly anti-Catholic. It was also anti-Mason, anti-Jewish, anti-immigrant. And this is why these stories are relevant to today. All of them have a connection to what's going on in the world today. And the Klan of the 20s was all about stopping the Italians coming, or the Irish, or the Poles, or the Croats, or the Slovenians. So this story, unfortunately, is a mirror for our own times. These stories, all four in aggregate, especially the Klan and the anti-German hysteria, they look at, quote, the other. Who is the other, and why are we afraid of them?
Yeah, the fear of the other is almost endemic to being a human being. Those who read the Bible, you know, the whole Old Testament is the story of the strife between the Israelites and the Philistines and various other tribes. And you see that in the Middle East still, such a tribal thing where hatreds go way back. And Shiites and Sunnis have been murdering each other since the 7th century, so plenty of evidence that we fear the other. But the Ku Klux Klan, what I like about your presentation is that most people have a general knowledge of that associated with the South. Nathan Bedford Forrest, a very gifted cavalry officer for the South, is thought to be the founder of the Klan. And, of course, that was there to enforce the same kind of social stratum that existed after slavery was abolished, to keep the black people down in the South and to keep them in their place. But we don't realize that that metastasized up north here. I think I read of a massive Klan demonstration in Fort Dodge in 1920-something.
Yeah.
Do you have information on that?
Sure. There were very large Klan events in Davenport, Bettendorf, at Ocheden Mountain, northwest Iowa. They used to burn crosses from that highest geological point in Iowa. There were Klan days, the fair in Newton and in Marshall County, where you could go through the fair gates, take your ticket to the Klan booth, and they'd stamp it, and you'd have free entry. There were Klan picnics. Davenport had a Klan baseball team. They had a Klan marching band. One of the things we have available at our programs are some magazines and books about these stories. Well, one of them is about the Iowa Klan. It shows pictures of huge events. Greenfield, Iowa was also a sub-center of Klan activity here. What I do want to point out is that the Klan had a great deal of influence in that period. Politicians were afraid of the Klan because so many were involved with it. And you can attribute the Klan to the passage of very strict anti-immigration laws in the 20s, where Eastern Europeans, Southern Europeans were not welcome, but whether we had more quotas for Danes, for Germans, for Brits, for Irish, etc. And after that immigration reform was passed, we had almost no Japanese immigrants allowed coming in, or Chinese. I should also mention that prohibition, the Klan said it was going to defend the morals of the country. It was against booze, smoking marijuana, what they called illicit sex. They said they were going to defend the moral purity of America and of Americanism. And prohibition, in part, was also anti-German, because almost all the breweries were in German hands. All these stories are tied together, and that's one of the things that the audience is always astounded by, is how these are all different heads of the same hydra.
And so, basically, you're talking about the Klan having all kinds of prohibitions against this and that. So I suppose that the attraction at that time, or the way it portrayed itself, was as a religious organization.
Very much so.
You know, that's because you have, on the face of it, you don't present yourself as a prejudiced or judgmental or angry group, but an attractive group that's there to defend America as we understand it to be, right?
We have a picture of one of their brochures from the time with a Klan member on a white horse sort of rising up and galloping off, and it says, "America for Americans, 100% Americanism." And many of the Klan cartoons at the time were all touting Americanism and purity in defense of Midwest Klan members. Not that I really want to do that, but they hadn't been exposed to the TV films or the cinema films that we grew up seeing in the 70s and 80s showing cross burnings. I mean, they probably knew of these things. That all would have been through newspaper articles or the early radio, I don't know. But they had a different picture of the Klan. And as you just alluded, the Klan itself sold itself as a force for virtue. I should say that a difference between the first wave of the Klan after the Civil War and the second wave in the 20s was the second wave was very professional. They hired a PR firm in Atlanta, Georgia. They had beautiful costumes and posters, whereas the first Klan, it was all very amateurish. And even clownish. The second Klan looked like these guys knew what they were doing. They were organized. They brought 40,000 people to Washington, D.C. the summer of 1925. They marched from the Capitol to the White House. There are pictures on the Internet you can call up. They were very impressive. But, of course, they had a very dark agenda.
Well, now, there's no anonymity with these people either, to wear hoods or conceal their identity, right?
The march that I just alluded to in Washington, if you pull that up on the Internet, all the men are showing their faces. They had to. The Washington city officials, they said, yes, you can march, but you have to show your face. I think in daily life, however, they would have rather worn the full hoods. We have too many pictures of the Klan in open cars during the day. They all have concealed faces. We have a photo of the Klan in Colorado. All the Ferris wheel riders are Klan members, so, I don't know, 30, 40 Klan members are all wearing hoods. Colorado, by the way, was a center of the Klan. They reached down into everyday life, down to Main Street, not just Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, but the Klan trickled down to the local level. I have a story that I tell of the later Quaker schoolmarm, Leonore Goodenow. She was later the head of Scattergood School, which is still in existence in Iowa City. And she was the principal at a school, I think it was in Argyle, Iowa, down by Keokuk. The Klan took over the school board. And, of course, here was this young woman in the teens, 20s, in charge of the school district. And when the Klan took over, they began going to the library and saying, well, this book is immoral, that book's immoral. And they finally had a showdown over a book by a Norwegian author that the Klan school board members claimed was trash and sexual, and she stared them down. The Klan infiltrated in all the ways that it could, trying to get into county commission boards, church councils. I went through many southern Iowa towns with my bus and told some of these stories, and every town we went through, Sheridan, Bedford, Centerville, people always came up and said, well, actually, the Klan used to burn crosses down the lane at my uncle's farm. So it was throughout the state. And above all, we heard that in many of those little towns, all the Protestant pastors were in the Klan. All of the Protestant pastors in these little southern Iowa towns were in the Klan. Again, it was anti-Catholic. They would gain from that.
Yeah, I believe in the what I read was in the march in the Fort Dodge demonstration, the theme was anti-Catholicism. You know, they thought that these are papists who will have allegiance to the Pope prior to being allegiant to America, which was some of the, that was an issue in Jack Kennedy's election. He had to actually give a speech, you know, disassociating himself with the papacy and understanding that I'm an American, I'll be your president, not answerable to the Pope. And so in the 1960s, you still had this residual anti-Catholic feeling that had to be dealt with, you know. And so
My mother said growing up on a farm in northern Iowa that a mixed marriage in her day in the 30s and 40s when she was a kid, it wasn't between blacks and whites. Literally, a mixed marriage was between a German Catholic and Norwegian Lutheran. It just wasn't done. You didn't cross-marry in those days. If you did, families would often disown you.
Oh, yes. In my hometown, in the 1950s, if a Methodist married a Lutheran, there was some question about the children. You know, it's a mixed marriage. How will that ever work out?
Well, last night, one of the questions was, why was the Klan, why were Americans so anti-Catholic in that period? You have to realize that, for example, in Iowa, during World War One, all these young men marched off either to war, or they went to Washington to work in the government, or they were in the wartime industries in Chicago or Detroit, wherever. So it was a huge labor shortage. And Iowa headhunters were going to the Delta states of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. They brought African-Americans north to work in the packing plants of Waterloo, of Omaha. They brought Italian-Americans from, say, Brooklyn to Des Moines. They brought Slavs to Council Bluffs. Irish were brought. And so what was convenient, all of these groups, except for the African-Americans, were Catholic. So when, quote, our boys, people like my great-grandfather, when they came back from the war or in any event from the war effort, and they, quote, found these people in my jobs, then it was then an economic question was competition. I'm not a Marxist, but Karl Marx said that ultimately all social conflicts come down to an economic spark. And in this case, it's also true that the anti-Catholicism was fanned by competition for jobs and resources, which is an old song. You know, this is in every country, again and again in every era, humans compete, and they find reasons to hang on that competition, a reason to not want them or to hate them.
And there's the fear of the other, and as you point out, it has a very definite economic impact because, as you said, people came back home and found their jobs occupied by others. But it's also typical that new immigrant groups historically have taken jobs that Americans don't want to do. That's an example here of the, well, for instance, migrant farm labor, you know.
Yeah.
In our modern era, heavy construction jobs. Almost like we just had a big project in our remodeling our elementary school in Story City. And my observation was almost the whole crew was Hispanic. And yeah. That's definitely true of roofing and very hard labor jobs nowadays of Americans who are native born aren't as likely to take those as a struggling immigrant group. And so today it might be Hispanics. Historically, when large immigrations took place, there was the Irish and then the Italians. You know, you name the ethnic group, and they took the entry-level jobs that Americans would not do.
It's actually a great honor, and it's a great experience to live in a foreign country. And I live part of, each year in Germany where I teach at a university. And, of course, with the current influx of Syrian refugees and others, a lot of the right wing is all hopped up about the supposed Islamification of Germany, but in reality, many of these people take jobs that Germans won't take. Even in towns of relative high unemployment, many of the young Germans won't take jobs that then these Arabs or people from Northeast Africa or the Balkans, they'll come in and they'll take the jobs. So that's just a hard reality. And speaking of Germany, by the way, today at Marshalltown Community College from 2 to 3, I'll be giving a program called Kicking the Kaiser. What's interesting is that to this day, the largest ethnic group in the United States is German-Americans. If you take Hispanics and break them down by Mexican-Americans, Guatemalan-Americans, Cuban-Americans, Germans are still the largest ethnic heritage group in this country. Certainly in World War I, it was by far the largest, far more than English or Scottish or Welsh. And yet, despite that, after April 1917, once the United States entered World War I, overnight, there was this explosion of anti-German hysteria, and you had literally the tarring and feathering of German Americans in the United States for supposedly not being patriotic enough. You had lynchings, like of Robert Prager in East St. Louis in Illinois, who was lynched for not being patriotic enough. German Americans changed their names. The towns of Lincoln, Iowa, east of Ames, used to be Berlin, Iowa. Up where I'm from, far north Iowa, it's called now Lakota, Iowa. It was called Germania or Germania in German up until World War I. So they made even the largest ethnic group the other, which is absurd. And German Americans were accused of being anti-American or aloyal, disloyal. And, of course, that was almost, in all cases absurd, and yet it worked. And even the Iowa governor forbade the speaking of German other non-English languages during World War I. How can that work? Well, it happened.
Right. That's just, and of course, intensified in view of the fact that there was a war on. Now, it's interesting that this group was ostracized, even though ethnically they were not a minority group numerically.
Yeah. If you will, you can even say that in many Midwest towns, the German Americans were the majority. And sometimes that was a clear case, but they were definitely in most Midwest towns the largest ethnic group. And overnight, they were the enemy, they were suspect. German Americans would wake up to find their homes painted yellow. Because they were seen to be as cowards. German American church services fell out of favor. Before the World War I, there had been over 1,100 German language newspapers. By the end of the war, there were very few left. Today, I think the last one closed in New York a year or so ago.
Well, Michael, this has been, we could go on and on, but I...
Let's do that. That's fun.
you've touched the surface on something that really will be fleshed out on Tuesday, October 2nd, at the Ames Public Library. This will be Michael Lewick Thrams, and the title of your presentation is The Klan, the White Cancer, and we'll see the second wave of the Klan explained Tuesday, October 2nd, Ames Public Library. And that'll be at what time, Michael?
7. And please tell your listeners to go to our website, traces.org. They can find a schedule. For example, I'm in your area the whole time, Perry, Marshalltown, all around the region. They can go to our website, traces.org. They can also view some of these programs online at our website.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Paul Wearson and I, Susan Franzen, have been your hosts for today. Other voices you heard were Icha from Ames High, and I'm not going to try to pronounce her name, but she also is Maria. She was here talking about the Iris Peace Walk. The voices of others from the Peace Walk were heard, but I don't have their names. And Michael Lewick Throms.
You can listen to today's local talk show and any of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org.
Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you will decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, providing rebates to customers for upgrading to energy-efficient appliances, lighting, thermostats, and air conditioners. Smart energy rebates help you decrease your power needs, which can lower your electric bills. Learn more from www.cityofames.org/smartenergy.